I have a reoccurring dream. It used to take a different form, but now when I have it, it's that I stand up in the pulpit and I suddenly realize that I don't have a sermon. Sometimes it takes the form of I left my outline at home or in my office. Sometimes it's that I'm just embarrassingly unprepared. And I look down and I realize I haven't prepared anything. I assure you that hasn't happened tonight. But that's a sickening scenario, isn't it? It used to come to me in the form of I walk into math class and realize I haven't been coming all semester and now I have a test to take. And I think many of us have been there. We've been in those scenarios. We're familiar with that feeling. Jesus in Matthew 25 indicates through the use of his parables that many seem to approach eternity in this way. And sadly, these are not nightmares. These are not dreams. These are realities. That through the truths that he's speaking through these parables, there are people who are going to approach judgment. They're going to stand before the throne of God, and they're going to have that fumbling non-answer before them. They're going to be like the one who gets up here and doesn't know what to say when it's time to open his mouth, or the one who has to take the test and knows he doesn't know any of the answers. That's going to be the reality, is what Jesus is saying. One scholar in his commentary on Bible backgrounds made this comment about Matthew 25 in verse 1 and following. Being a bridesmaid was a great honor. To be insultingly unprepared and shut out of the feast was the stuff of which young women's nightmares were made. I think we get that idea. We show up for something really important and suddenly we realize we aren't ready for that moment. And what we have here in Matthew 25 is the culmination, really, of a discussion Jesus has been having for quite some time with those who are listening about the idea of being prepared. Going back into chapter 24, the disciples had some questions for him in the beginning of that text. They say, tell us, when will these things happen? The fall of the temple, the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And most of what Jesus talks about in Matthew 24, I believe, is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. But he does have some things in there about the end of the age as well. And when you come toward the end of this text, he says in verse 42, therefore be on the alert, or be watchful, it might say in your Bible, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. In the next verse, but be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert, he would have been watchful, and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. And then he talks about the nature of a faithful slave, the one who knows his master is going to be coming, and the way he's going to operate, and the things he's going to do in preparation for that reality. And when we get to chapter 25, he begins with another section that has to do with being watchful, using the same terminology. And then we'll have a real life illustration of this, which we'll not get to tonight, but in Matthew 26, he tells the disciples when they go with him, keep watch. It's the same wording. Keep watch with me 1 hour. And what we see is because they're not prepared, because they're not watchful, they fall. Matthew is giving us a tightly knit story here about the idea of being on the alert, about being watchful. And I want us to read Matthew 25 and get the idea, get the sense of these three scenarios. There's a wedding scene, there's a master and slave scene, and there is the throne scene, the ultimate scene before the throne of God in judgment. This is what Matthew has to say. Then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the prudent took oil and flasks along with their lamps. Now while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight there was a shout, behold, the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the prudent answered, no. There'll not be enough for us and you too. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves. While they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, And those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. Later, the other virgins also came, saying, Lord, Lord, open for us. But he answered, Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour. For it is just like a man about to go on a journey, who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately, the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more, but the one who received the 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one also had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered and said to him, You wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I do not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger, invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison or come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. Then he will also say to those on his left, Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they themselves also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not take care of you? Then he will answer them, Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. These will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. What a powerful text. Jesus speaking about the importance of preparation in life. And really, the reality that so many go to this substantial event in their life unprepared. especially those whom we would expect to be prepared, which is what Jesus is often dealing with. Just two chapters earlier, he's pronouncing woes upon the religious leaders of the people. They are the ones who are not receiving what Jesus is saying. They're the ones specifically who are not prepared. To some extent, his disciples are not listening to what he's having to say. And so at this moment, they're not very well prepared either. And so he's trying to help them see their need to be prepared for the moments to come. And in fact, as I already referenced in Matthew 26, they fail, the disciples do, in their preparation. This story of the virgins who are unprepared is one of great dishonor. It's the kind of thing that lives in infamy. You think of some story of some wedding and some horrible thing that happens and how that story just gets told over and over again. The bridesmaids don't show up, or they come and they don't have their dresses with them, or whatever type of scenario you can come up with where they're not prepared. That is not the sort of thing we want to happen in our wedding, is it? And what's happening here is these ladies show up. They're the ones who are supposed to be escorting the groom to the bride and then bringing him back for the feast, and they fail in their duty. They don't do the very thing they were supposed to be doing. This honorable position they were supposed to have, they fail in regards to what they're supposed to do simply because they're not prepared. So the story goes in each scene, whether it is the wedding scene or the master-slave scene or the throne scene, that people are not prepared, they're not ready, they haven't thought through the scenario with gravity and seriousness. And I want us to get some lessons from Matthew 25 as we survey this text. We could go in great depth in each one of these stories, but what I want to do tonight is talk about these kingdom parables. This will be my last sermon on kingdom parables this year, as Jeff and I have been going through some of them from time to time. I think it's appropriate that we're talking about these preparation parables. Being ready for the end. Am I ready for the day of judgment? Am I ready to be called before the throne of God, which is where this story ultimately goes in these parables? Am I ready to stand there and for Jesus to be separating right and left? And Jesus wants his disciples, he wants those with an earshot, to be considering the seriousness of this situation and what the kingdom of heaven will be like. The first thing he deals with here in the story of the ten virgins, as we talk about this idea of preparation, is the reality that preparation is my responsibility. That's what the story of the virgins really tells us. This is something that I have to bring myself. I can't expect someone else to be preparing for me. It's not going to be the elders that are preparing myself. It's not going to be my wife. It's not going to be a good friend. Now, some of those can aid us in our preparation, but ultimately it comes down to the reality that I must be prepared myself, and it is my responsibility to make sure that I'm prepared. When these ten virgins come, the foolish ones, they're very short-sighted. They're not considering the full situation, the reality that the bridegroom often is delayed in his coming. And so they think that they can get by with the very least. And really, they're only prepared to do what is necessary. They bring their lamp and they bring some oil. They do the bare minimum. They do merely enough to get by. And as is so often the case, when we do merely enough to get by, we figure out that merely enough to get by is not enough to get by. And when the moment comes, the moment for which they're supposed to be prepared, that is when they realize they are unprepared. Up to that moment, things seem to be okay. They've got the lamps and they're burning and they appear just like everyone else, just like the five wise virgins. They seem to be ready for this occasion. But then when the moment comes, it is revealed how unprepared they really are. Because they weren't watchful. That's the summary given for this scene in the text. Notice what he says here in verse 13. Be on the alert then, or therefore be watchful. As he tells the story about the five wise and the five foolish virgins and the way in which they're operating in this story, the conclusion, or maybe what we would call the moral of the story, is to be watchful. no doubt connected to the end of 24 and then ultimately 26, where he envelops this idea of watchfulness, of seeing and having perspicuity about what's around us. It's seeing through things. They should have been able to look forward and realize, hey, maybe the bridegroom will be delayed, and so I should prepare a little bit more than I actually think I need. When we first got married, we moved to Texas pretty quickly. We were living on the other side of town. And I remember in those early days, as you go through this, you realize you do things really differently than your spouse. And Katie and I, we have a lot of similarities, but we have some differences. One of the things that Katie really hates to do is pack. And so she would take a really long time to pack because she just didn't enjoy it. And sometimes I would pack in just a few minutes, and then I would think, why is this taking so long? And I think we've both improved in the way in which we do things. But I'll tell you what I learned over time is that sometimes I didn't put enough thought into my own packing. And I would get somewhere, and I didn't have the things I need. And, of course, that provided the opportunity for Katie to say, see, I told you. And to some degree, find these women in this scenario. They seem thoughtless. They seem careless. They're just going to approach the preparation to this event very casually, as if it really doesn't matter that much. But then when the moment comes, it matters a great deal. Their casualness to the situation, their casualness to the event has come back to get them. And now, although they think they're ready and they think they've got what they need, now that there is a delay and it now is brought to the attention that the bridegroom is coming, they suddenly realize they're there standing unprepared. They're here and they need to speak and they have nothing to say. They have to take the test and they haven't studied. And it's shameful. It's embarrassing. When they try to come back and they knock on the door and they say, let us in, they shut them out and they say, we don't know you. I don't believe it is that they don't actually know them. I think this is the scene in which they've been an embarrassment to the situation. And now they're being shut out of the feast. A feast that very often an entire village would be invited to. In these types of wedding scenes, you think about Jesus and the wedding of Cana and how people would come there to that wedding and many people would have been there. And yet these foolish virgins who were supposed to be central to what's happening here in the story, because of their foolishness, now they're being shut out because they're not prepared. And what Jesus wishes us to understand is sometimes we come without extra oil. Sometimes we are not ready. Sometimes we are not watchful. He's saying, be watchful. That's the lesson here. Be able to look around and see the situation and realize what is needed. So how does that work for us? Where is the application in terms of being prepared, having the extra oil as we're waiting for the coming of the bridegroom? Let me just make a few suggestions for us tonight. That where we find the extra oil is in things like spending time with other saints. Things like coming to study, whether it's in our official studies that we have on a weekly basis or other studies that we can go and do with other people, being at worship regularly, having personal study time. The oil's going to run out real quickly as we're awaiting the return. If we aren't opening this book and reading and studying, if we aren't meditating, if we aren't praying on a daily basis, on a regular basis, if we aren't befriending and becoming close and building a relationship with fellow saints, if we aren't worshiping God, getting that little piece of what reality actually is throughout our week as we then go back out into the world, which is not reality. This is the representation of reality. Reality is standing before God for all eternity. That's what we are heading towards. That's what it's going to be. And we don't have that right now, but we get a little taste of that from time to time as we gather together to worship. And when we neglect that, when we take that casually, when we decide that reading our Bible is not all that significant, when prayer is not that important in our life, spending time with people and making time to spend time with other saints, that's not all that vital. I have work to do. I've got other places to be. The oil's going to run out. And when the announcement comes, behold, the bridegroom comes. there are going to be a lot of people knocking on the door, standing in shame. That's what Jesus is indicating here in this parable. There's just not good enough preparation, Jesus says. So often, people discount the need for these significant parts of our life, the spiritual aspects of our life, feeding our spirit. We would never neglect our body. As a general rule, that's something we wouldn't do. We wouldn't neglect the feeding of our own body. We realize how vital that is and how important that is, that we wouldn't neglect that. But at the same time, sometimes we neglect our own spirit. To the point that the oil runs dry and there's nothing left to keep the wick burning. And what we see from this story is, my preparation is my responsibility. They go and they ask these other young ladies. They say, hey, can you give us some oil? They say, no, we have enough for ourselves. We need to be prepared. We prepared for this event. If we give you some, we won't be ready. You're going to run our lamp dry if we give you oil. And the lesson is, be watchful. Be alert, be awake, however you want to phrase it. That's the idea of the term there, that we are ready to encounter the things that come. The very thing that Peter and James and John were not ready to do in the garden scene. Because they weren't watchful, they weren't ready. And when the moment came, they all left him and they fled. And when we let our lamps run dry, we will do the same. Jesus wishes to emphasize this idea, this concept of preparation in our life, our need to be ready for the return, for the coming of the bridegroom. The second scene here is the scene of the master and the slave. But he does connect the two, as he will the third. In verse 14, you notice the wording there. He gives the moral of the story, the summary. Be on the alert, therefore, for you do not know the day nor the hour. You don't know when this is going to happen, so you better be very prepared for this event. And then in verse 14, there's a signal there that he's going to transition right into the next thought, into the next story. He says, for it is just like a man about to go on a journey. Now, I'm going to explain this to you a little bit more, Jesus says. It's like this man who's going to go on a journey, and he gives his possessions. He makes these stewards of his slaves. He hands it over to them, each according to his ability. He gives one 5, one 2, and one of them a single talent. And you know the story as we just read it. Eventually, after a long time, it says, he returns. And now they have to give account. And what I want us to understand about this story and this part of what Jesus is saying about preparation is that stewardship is the foundation of God's economy. In God's kingdom, and the way God's kingdom operates, what he expects is good stewardship. He expects us to take what we have been provided and to use it in his kingdom and use it in his service. Notice that God provides the tools that are needed to please him. He gives us what we need, and he doesn't give us more than we need. He doesn't give us less than we need. He gives us exactly what we need. And so in chapter 25, in verse 15, it says he gave them these talents, each according to his own ability. He didn't try to throw 5 talents on the 1 talent man for obvious reasons, as we see in the story. He wouldn't have known how to handle it. But he did have expectations for that man. He didn't come back and say, well, I just figured you'd mess up, and so it's all going to be okay. That's not how God's economy works. That's not how his kingdom operates. No, stewardship is the foundation of it. He expects all of us to be working and to be doing our part. He doesn't expect more than we can do. He doesn't expect us, though, to accomplish what we are able to accomplish. And the lesson here is that the 1 talent man was lazy and wicked and worthless because God had given him exactly what he needed. He'd given him that 1 talent. And he makes the point here in the story itself is that you could have just gone to the bank and put it there in the bank and just gotten a little bit of interest. If you would have done just a little bit, I know you just have a little bit of ability. That's why I gave you 1 talent. But that is what I expect from you. I don't expect you to go dig a hole in the ground and stick it there and just give me back what I gave you. That's worthless. God expects his people to be working in his kingdom. And so the point of the first story is be watchful. Be careful in the things that we're doing. Be looking around and seeing the temptations and the struggles and the difficulties and in the areas in which we can build up that extra oil to supply our need. But the second point is be diligent. Be diligent. Be a good steward of what God has given us. Now, as the story indicates, it's different for every single person. Of course, this is overly simplified. It's not just the five, the two, and the one talent. It's everything in between. And everyone in this room tonight has various abilities to different degrees. But here's what the story of preparedness tells us. That is that God will not expect too much than we can do, but he does expect us to do what we can do. And when we don't do what we can do, we failed him miserably. To the point that what he says to this man is, you are a lazy, wicked slave. And even more than that, I'm going to cast you out into outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. If the only thing that you're able to do is greet people at the door, if that is your only ability and you fail to do it, you are the one talent man here. That's what Jesus is saying. And we could come up with all kinds of scenarios and situations and try to run down those, but I really just don't feel like it's necessary. We all have abilities. We all have something we can do in the kingdom of God. My ability might not be the same as yours. Yours is the same as mine. But we know what our abilities are to some degree. And we need to be looking for other areas in which we can be influential and not just give up on our abilities. Because God does expect us to work. He expects us to function within his kingdom, within his economy, as people who are going to give back. Now, there's some things in this text that people aren't going to be very comfortable with in our world. For everyone who has, more shall be given. You know, he says, you know what? The 1%, I'm going to give them more. That's what he says. The people who bring it and do their job and are effective and want to work in the kingdom, I'm going to give them abundance. Now, people aren't comfortable with that in our economy. They don't like that. Those people they're privileged. And I understand there's differences in how this works, but I want us to see the discrepancy here in thinking. But what God says, if we do our job and we are effective in what we are doing, he's going to give us more, and then he will expect more. It is a plan that has incentive, and it has growth, and it has power. And the one who has nothing, he says, I'm going to take and I'm going to give him some more, so he has some, right? No. The one who has nothing, I'm going to take it away. I'm going to strip everything from him. And I'm going to cast him into outer darkness. Now, I understand if you can look at other parts of the Gospels, even in Matthew. And you realize that there are areas where he talks about helping other people. And so I'm not negating that reality, but what I am saying is that God does have expectations for us, and he makes very clear in these texts about being prepared, that the one who fails to be prepared, the one who's casual about being prepared, who doesn't think this is all that big of a deal, just going to go through life, God's going to take care of it all, it's okay if I sin occasionally, it's not that big of a deal, the one who is not prepared is going to be cast out. They're going to be a failure. They're going to be called lazy and wicked. This is the perspective of God through Jesus Christ in the parable of preparedness. If we think we can just float through life and just show up occasionally and just kind of sit and listen and sometimes throw a few things in and maybe help everybody every once in a while, we have missed what Christianity is about. And that's what Jesus wishes them to see here. That this is something that we all share in, whether it's the five talent, the two talent, the one, the three, the ten, whatever it might be, there is work for everyone. There are ways in which everyone can serve. There are ways in which everyone can give back and can give account when the day comes. And I dug a hole and stuck it in the ground will not be an acceptable answer. So the message is to be watchful, to be diligent, and then finally to be realistic. I say that because some of this seems so distant to us sometimes, so abstract. And of course, Jesus tells these parables to try to bring it down to earth. And that's the purpose of a parable, right? They understand what a shepherd does. And so he concludes these parables with this idea of the shepherd separating his sheep and doing his job and how that looks and how that works. Something they can visualize, something they can see. But as we think about the final day of judgment, we think about how this is going to play out on the eternal scale. Sometimes it is so abstract to us that it's just really hard to grasp that this is real. This is not something that we just talk about occasionally from week to week and say, hey, be good, make the right decisions, because there's going to be this day in the end where we're going to have to say some things to God, you know, settle some accounts. Now, this is reality. And the reality is, this is of an eternal scale. This is something extremely significant. This is the throne scene. He's sitting here in his glory on his throne, ready to determine the eternal destiny of the people who are coming before him. There's nothing temporary about it. He doesn't say, hey, you goats, you kind of go over here, and you'll be there for a little bit, and then after a little while, we'll let you come back, and everything's going to be all right after you kind of do your due penance. That's not the story. And when we're thinking about preparedness, when we're thinking about that day, whenever it will come, we don't know the hour. I think this is a general principle. I don't think they knew it with the destruction of Jerusalem. Even though he says where the vultures are, there's going to be the prey. There are some things that are obvious, but they didn't know the day or the hour. And I think this is a principle that goes into the idea of it being the day of the Lord, whether it is these occasional days of the Lord talked about in Scripture in the Old Testament or here with the fall of Jerusalem, or we're talking about the end of time. We don't know how this is going to happen. And so he says we better be prepared for it to happen anytime. We better be watchful. We better be diligent. We better be realistic about what's going to happen. That one day Jesus is going to come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and he's going to sit and he's going to bring judgment on everyone. All nations, he says, will stand before him. And he'll separate the sheep from the goats. And there's going to be a lot of people who are surprised. He starts with the people on his right. And it's interesting that there's a little bit of surprise with them, isn't it? Kind of like the talents. He says, hey, you are good, you're faithful, enter into the joy of your master. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick, you visited me. You came to me in prison. You gave me food when I was hungry. And they are surprised. When did we do all these things? But of course, then those goats on the left are also a little bit surprised. As he reminds them that they didn't take care of him, as they neglected even the least. Probably a direct shot at the Pharisees here and the rulers who tended to neglect their fellow man. That part of the puzzle here, part of how this works, it is not just our relationship with God, but also our relationship with one another. And that comes out very strongly here in Matthew 25 in this final scene where the judgment here is not about doctrine, as important as doctrine is. He doesn't say, you missed it on this doctrine and that doctrine and that doctrine, and so you're not entering in. No, he says, I was hungry and you did not feed me. I was naked and you didn't clothe me. I was sick and you didn't care. Our behavior is vitally important to that day that we're going to give account before God. The way in which we interacted with our fellow man, with our brethren, he puts in prime position here. Now, in other places, he does talk about keeping the commandments of God and doing God's will. And so I'm not minimizing that at all. But we do need to see the point he's making here and the value of what it means in our behavior toward one another and toward our fellow man. That this does factor in this final day, in this idea of being prepared for the day of judgment, being ready for him to come. We have to stand before his throne. We have to give account. what is most important to us in our life? I think to some degree that's what Jesus is trying to help them understand. Is it honor, which is what the Pharisees seem to be after? Is it money? I mean, we find out in other places they were lovers of money as well, and so they were after money. Are these things what's really important? Is it our education? Is it our abilities to play instruments or sports? Are those things that really matter in life? Are they going to help us in any way be prepared for the things being talked about here? I mean, as I ask these questions, every single one of us in this room, we know the answer. It's so easy. It's so obvious. Just like the point of every single parable he told. Isn't it so obvious that it's shameful for these virgins to not be prepared and not be there when the moment comes? Isn't it plainly obvious that the one talent man, he buries this thing in the ground and doesn't do anything with it? It's so obvious. We don't help our fellow man, the end of this parable. It's so clear, which is why Jesus is using these parables. But the reality is we are so tempted to do those very things. And that's why he tells the story. Although we know the answers, and they make sense to us in our minds, it's a completely different issue putting them into practice in our life. We can know intellectually what we are supposed to do and still not experience it through actions. And so although we know we should be prepared, it's very easy to find ourselves without oil in our lamp because we haven't made the proper precautions. We haven't shielded ourselves from temptation. We haven't made available to ourselves the resources that we have before us that can be used to better not only ourselves but those around us. Sometimes we understand we shouldn't be burying that talent in the ground and giving our master nothing back. But sometimes we just sit and we don't do anything when we know we should be doing something. Jesus understands what's in the heart of man. In fact, John tells us, even though they were swarming to Jesus and listening to them, he didn't entrust himself to them because he knew what was in the heart of man. He knows that we struggle. He knows that we have difficulty. And so in these parables, what he's trying to help us do is understand these three ideas that we need to be alert. We need to be watchful. We need to be careful in the things that we do and the directions that we go in our life, because if we're not careful, we're going to run that oil dry. We have to be diligent to serve and to work in God's kingdom, and we have to be realistic that this is going to happen. These aren't myths. They aren't fanciful stories. They aren't things that we talk about that just really aren't going to take place. No, there is going to be eternal judgment. And the things that we're doing here, they are of vital importance. This is not just about being social club, having some really good friends. And those things happen. We do socialize and we do get to know each other. And that's great. And that's part of the plan. But it's so much bigger than that. It's so much more important. And it's so much more serious than just having somewhere to go a few times a week. Again, I'm not telling you anything new. But sometimes it is just the reality of how this happens in our life. How many times have you heard somebody, whether it's in a sermon or at work or other places, talk about how we just let ourselves get too busy these days? I hear that all the time. I read it in books. I see it online, in social media, all kinds of comments about that. And then what do? Just go look at your calendar. And we're still too busy these days, aren't we? Again, we get it here. But sometimes we don't get it here. Enough to make ourselves change where it really matters. Am I prepared? The kingdom of heaven is going to be like these situations, is what Jesus is saying. And in the end, I'm going to stand before God and I'm going to have to tell him, give him account of the decisions I made in my life. The one talent man, he operates out of fear. The other two operate out of faithfulness. And I would encourage all of us in our walk with Christ to operate out of faithfulness, not fear. To be servants, to be loyal, to be dedicated. Not do it just to avoid hell. Not do it just to avoid that judgment scene. But to do it because we love God and we want to keep his commandments. And we want to do his will. And we want to help people. And we want to be ready for that day. And we want it to be a day of joy. Good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your master. The one talent man, he missed it. He thinks his master's harsh. He thinks his master's unreasonable. The other two guys, they got it. They realized he gave them exactly what they needed and they could deliver back to him exactly what he wanted. And the same is true for every single one of us tonight. Can we help you in some way tonight? Do you need to make it known that you want to be of service, that you want to use your abilities, that you want to serve in the kingdom, that you want to be better at being watchful and fill your lamp with oil and have reserve so that you're waiting for that day when Jesus is going to come again? Can we help you in some way? Can we baptize you into Christ tonight? Bring you into that relationship? We're ready to do that. And if you need to make something right with him and you know you're not right, we'd love to help you in any way we can in that too. Why don't you come as we stand and we sing together?